640 Toronto presents Think Tank. The breaking stories you care about. Facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
All right, it's Think Tank on a Thursday or Wednesday morning. I've said Thursday twice. That is so unlike me. But let's pretend it's Thursday and we'll pretend tomorrow's Friday and then we'll just take an extra day and take next Monday. Makes sense? Sure it does. Mark Saunders is the former chief of police. You should give me a ticket for confusing people about what day it is right now. That's a fineable offense.
I'm working on it.
I hope so. Yes. A new statute without a statute of limitations that I've broken because it's not the first time I've done it. Stephanie Smythe handles Smythe Media Group and joins us now on Toronto Today. It's great to have you on.
Hey, morning. Hi, Mark. Hi, Brad.
And yes, you have introduced Brad Bradford, Toronto City Councillor, who actually is in studio with us. What do you, you're a cyclist, so do you just ride around on all these bike lanes that Mark Saunders didn't want and you like wave your arms in the air? How did you get here this morning?
Jog across Danforth.
You
down
didn't jog.
No, on the bike.
Okay,
on the bike.
That's
roll across
thing,
Danforth,
yeah.
Down Sherbourne, and then you get down here to Queens Quay. It's a bit of a mess with the construction, but that's the state of affairs here in Toronto.
Isn't it now? Yes, we could get to some of the congestion issues. Well, I want to start here with something that a lot of people may be waking up to learn about, and nobody likes it. Nobody likes the look of it. But the question is, what do we do and how do we react when it does happen? There was a dinner celebration, an iftar dinner celebration to celebrate the end of Ramadan last night, being hosted by the mayor, Olivia Chow, at City Council Chambers. And it kind of kicked off with a bit of the proceedings being hijacked by what we can describe as pro-Palestinian supporters. But it went the wrong direction. Here's some of what was said and heard.
I just want to say that November last month, I'm sorry, I didn't call for a ceasefire. I just want
to. That is not enough. We call on Mayor Olivia Chow to be an advocate for a two-way arms embargo on Israel.
Okay, so a lot of people there, accusations of Chow being complicit in genocide were being shouted out last night. Let's start with the law enforcement guy, Mark Saunders. This isn't great. We want people to be able to speak their piece, speak freely, but I'm not sure we can have, it might be too far to call it an invasion, but it's a disruption of a religious event at City Council, and it makes all of us cringe a little bit. What are your thoughts about how we can prevent these things?
Yeah, well, Craig, I'm going to wear a different hat today. And when you said that where it went wrong, actually to them, it went right. And here's where it went right, because it's working, because we're talking about it. And then we're talking about all kinds of political disruptions that are happening because of it, the prime minister, the hospitals, and other things. And right now, just about every politician, when they go out to a venue, they're looking over their shoulder to see whether or not there's going to be this disruption. But you know what no one is talking about now? No one is talking about the fact that Hamas, which is an organized terrorist entity, could make the conscious decision of laying down their weapons and freeing the hostages. Nobody's talking about that. So these protests are actually working. And that's a sad state because we need to refocus on what we need to do in order to resolve this conflict as quick as possible because it is affecting everybody right now. But we're all in this right now and we don't like this. But it is democratic, and I felt for the mayor at that particular point in time. And you know, she is one that says, you know what, she insists on democracy and that it works when she did that at the rink at Nathan Phillips Square there, and she allowed that disrupted. But the problem is if you don't have proper structured environment for those conversations, it will embolden others. And so it'll not just affect the mayor, it'll affect every other city politician and other political parties as well.
Yeah, I want to come back to you on whether or not, Steph, I think Mark makes a great point in that the protesters think it's working because we're talking about, I cringe when I think of the support for the Palestinian people. You couldn't lose more support by these kind of tactics than they're actually doing. A University of Michigan undergrad graduation ceremony, like a university commencement, people flying in to see their kids walk across that stage, having spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. And that got interrupted. And they didn't kick the protesters out. They just ended the ceremony. Like, you're not going to win people over with those tactics, are you?
I don't know. Very good question. Because, as Mark said, it's getting all kinds of coverage. You're playing the key clip from the event. It does have impact. We know from just conversations that I've been having in the last couple of weeks about the situation between what's going on in the Middle East. It's the left, the younger demographic, very much in favor of what's going on. So I'm with Mark. It's like this is working, and it's not going to stop. And you can't shut down public demonstrations. You just can't. It's all about how it's handled in the aftermath and the conversation. I'm just glad that it's been handled peacefully, so that it hasn't escalated even more to another kind of coverage, right? That changes opinion. So, my thoughts.
Yeah, Brad, you've been in that city council chamber. You were in there for an interruption last week when Jewish city councilor James Pasternak was screamed at by a woman in the crowd who accused him of kids being killed when he lies, or some kind of silly rhyme, and you stood up and said this is no good. But not every councilor did.
Yeah, the silence was deafening, and it's disturbing because this stuff has proliferated. It's been allowed to proliferate across the city. You talk to folks from different community groups across Toronto, and they're telling you that they feel less safe, and they feel like there's been an absence of leadership on this file. And I think that's the challenge, is like, you know, these protesters, these radical activists will continue to push and push and push and see what they can get away with. And I felt bad for the mayor last night, too. I also actually felt bad for everybody who was in the chamber trying to break the fast after a long day of fasting. Yeah. and enjoy an iftar celebration together. You know, the previous mayor had done this for years. It's the tradition I'm glad Mayor Chow is continuing on with. But my panelists are correct. Like, we're all talking about it and burning airtime on it this morning, but I don't think the vast majority of Torontonians or people listen to that clip and are sympathetic to the cause. It's the same idea of, like, you know, trying to take my daughters to the Eaton Center for Santa Claus photos, and it's taken over by protests. Like, you're not winning the hearts and minds. You're not convincing people of your position on this conflict. And I think local government needs to focus on the state of affairs here in the city of Toronto. Well, you know, the mayor was opining and writing op-eds last week in association with what was going on in Parliament Hill. The reality, things are deteriorating in Toronto, and we need to focus on making this city safer and making sure that everybody, regardless of who they worship, can do so safely in Toronto.
It's just changed so much, Mark. And I would make the case that pre-social media, we wouldn't have asked a city councilor's opinion. We wouldn't have asked a mayor's opinion, probably not even a provincial politician's opinion about an international conflict. I'll go you one better. You and Brad are running for mayor around this time last year in the by-election. How often did Gaza and Israel and Palestine come up? Not one time, because it shouldn't be in your jurisdiction to either A, understand it, or B, opine about it. And we're asking everybody to weigh in on this now, Mark.
Yeah, but we've said, and history has said, through technology, the world is getting smaller. And there are huge advantages to that, because we do get to learn a lot. We do get to advance exponentially in all of the positive ways. But with that comes, whether we like it or not, an understanding of what's going on around the world. So look at the fact that because of technology, we get to hear some of the horrible, horrific things that are happening in other countries that, because we didn't see or hear about it, we thought it didn't exist. So we're wiser to the ways, and you're right, how we have to handle it is different. But because we all are connected now, world leader decisions have effect on the city of Toronto.
Yeah, there is that aspect to it. Let's leave this there. But I think important words about where we are now, how we got here, with very little answer. Nobody seems to have an answer as to where we can go with this. I want to talk about this BMO field expansion cost, and I'll start with you, Steph. Toronto's approved a nearly $40 million temporary expansion of BMO field. They need more seats in order to host these somewhat controversial World Cup games two summers from now. So it's a $37 million contract. But I'd bring this up. We were told the total costs of the event were $380 million. I think two questions are a fair ask of the city, Steph. One, was this the best usage, and was this the best contract they could get at $37 million? The other would be, tell me what the other $340 million is being spent on, because I assumed at least 25%, a third of this $380 million was about the stadium expansion, but it's coming in at less than 10% of the cost. So I think these are good questions to ask, and I hope they get answered.
Why do we always ask them after the fact? Right? It's like a done deal. It's like, okay, and Brad can speak to this more than I can, obviously, and Mark to an extent, but this is about transparency, right? It's always about that. So here we are, suddenly FIFA's on the agenda, right? It was talked about when it was bid for, blah, blah, blah. And now we're hearing all the effects of it and how that money is being allocated. I have no clue how these decisions are made, what kind of tenders are done. I know that the corporation that was hired to do by the committee to do the upgrading at BMO is, you know, a foreign country, but they're going to use local contractors. Maybe that's a way around it. But I don't know where all the money is going. This is something that has to be dissected, but is it too late? You know, the genie's out of the bottle, right? It's just, it's already allocated, or is it? And what can be done to change it? What, are we going to have protests? You know, all I know is you hope you have a stadium that can seat all the people so that at least some of the money is going there, Greg, that you're talking about. So it's a big question mark, and it's about transparency.
Yeah, and there's, listen, this is going to generate jobs. It is going to generate a ton of money in local GDP. But Mark Saunders, it is obviously, these are really fair questions to ask. And if we're watching what we're spending, if this is truly, and there's no reason to doubt otherwise, a city that was in a massive deficit and is quote unquote broke, these are really fair questions to say, tell us where the money's allocated, and are we double dipping anywhere? Is there anything that's a redundancy? These are really honest questions to ask.
No, they are great questions. And yet people are still upset at the fact that this agreement was signed in a dark room somewhere with the door locked, and it's really stinging. So when you talk about large-scale projects, and I've been involved in them before, and when people give bits and pieces of the large-scale projects, it becomes the death of the project because you don't get everything in full context. You know, the mayor made it clear that, you know, she was handed this and she's inherited this. And she publicly said, we're going to do everything we can to stay on top of it, even though we've got this cake that's baked. And the fact that there's a committee now, I think we have to rely on our local politicians and this committee. And I've worked with David Signacki before, and he's a pretty good guy to have on this type of thing.
Right.
To make sure that transparency piece is there, that it's open, it's given to us in real time and not retroactive when things are done after the payments are made. And I think it might help. But, you know, the other side to it, Greg, and we talked about it last week, this is going to bring in jobs. This is going to help our tourism. And if it's done right, it will be a great event. But boy, oh boy, we're not starting off as great as we could be.
Yeah, I think there is that. Brad Bradford is that member of local government. The biggest question people probably ask you is, how could this deal get signed without a vote in council? Many of you were surprised to find out. Why do we have a system where an unelected official gets told by Mayor Tory, hey, go get this done, and you all don't get to vote on it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I as we had this discussion, you know, 2 weeks ago at council, looked back on the record, and I guess it was January 2018, the first time it sort of came across the council floor, and there was delegated authority to staff. Now, that is not uncommon at City Hall or governments. You are delegating things to the bureaucrats, but when it comes to decisions of this size and magnitude, and the hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to be involved, the massive disruption that's going to come with it, and the tremendous upside and all the fun everybody's going to have. That stuff needs to be in front of council for robust discussions. I'm glad, frankly, that the mayor has appointed a team of allies to look over this very closely. But it's going to be a lot of work, and they're going to have to be held accountable as well from their colleagues and their peers at City Hall and Torontonians, because we already had a cost escalation in the order of tens of millions of dollars, and this is the first big piece. It's temporary infrastructure, so $37 million for a couple weeks there. And some of those upgrades are going to be permanent for the stadium, but a lot of them are going to go away after the event. So are we getting good value for money? All governments at all levels need to be absolutely seized with value for money. And that's what I'll be watching for on this file as we proceed.
Like, I get not debating every single decision on the council floor. You want to give a community group money for some kind of celebration or a new street sign, or here's fireworks for July 1st. This is a $400 million decision that you guys should have been debating.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think, and that was before I was in the building, but it's been back multiple times, and we haven't had the line of sight into that, and it's sort of all coming forward now. And again, these councillors who are part of the mayor's task team, and they will be seized with trying to go line by line and make sure that we're getting good value for that investment. And that's going to be difficult because we know these cost escalations go up, and we're already seeing that.
Go ahead, Steph.
That's my question. That's my question, is what can be done? Have these deals been signed? So is this, you know, is all the attention going to be focused on this, taking off other, you know, pertinent issues to the city? is there really any means to an end here, Brett?
Well, I think in this instance, the deal was basically signed yesterday, or it's going through committee and committee is approving it. So yes, it's coming forward of here's the contract with this firm over in UAE. Perhaps somebody decided that they were the best people to do it for whatever the reason is. And that was in front of Councillor Ainslie's committee yesterday. So I think that there are still opportunities when we're looking at vendors. Yes, the World Cup's coming. Yes, that deal is done.
It would have been a global embarrassment to try and get out of the deal.
Right.
You can't do
and
that.
Penalties.
Yeah, and penalties, Steph. You got it. Yeah.
Right. So we're in on it, but how we do it and how we manage those costs over the next couple of years, that's what's really important.
Let me get to this on the Ontario budget front. There's a massive deficit. Listen, we have dug ourselves a hole with the need to spend on healthcare, on education, and especially housing. Here was the reaction yesterday on John Oakley's show from NDP leader Marit Stiles.
You're seeing a government that hasn't really put much new in this budget. It's a lot of the same stuff they've already announced. I don't think conservatives are even that keen on this budget. It's a fiscally irresponsible budget.
Okay, and that comment is landing. I heard from conservatives who heard that same interview with John Oakley, and they're like, she's right. Let's turn it to you, Mark Saunders. This is a $9.8 billion deficit, unexpectedly high. The conservatives say, we're going to rectify that budget, but this is long-term, how would I put it, short-term pain in terms of the deficit for long-term gain, and they hope to turn that deficit around right before the next election. But does she have that right? Do conservatives like all this heavy spending?
Well, gee, I'm shocked that the opposition from the NDP disagreed with something said by the Conservatives. I really am. Listen, I've yet to hear a budget where everybody was happy, and this is another case. Here's the bottom line. Ontario has to keep moving. If Ontario slows down or stops, Canada fails, full stop. So is it going to be fiscally accountable? They've paid enough to keep things moving. They've hit the targets when it comes to affordability and knowing that people have concerns. They want to get houses built, and there have been some roadblocks and stumps that have happened throughout the existence of the past couple of years, and I get that. And, of course, there are some health issues. The budget addressed that to the extent that everybody is happy. Absolutely not. But it doesn't mean that the government's tone deaf. They're moving in a certain target. What the next chess piece is going to be critical. And again, what you said at the front end, Greg, is that they got to balance the books by 2026. And if they don't do that, then this will come back to bite them.
Steph, let's put the Smythe Media Group hat on. How would you advise Bonnie Crombie of the Liberals, Marit Stiles of the NDP, and say, listen, here's your problem. And this was your problem last election. No matter what the Ford government spends, even if conservatives don't like the spending sometimes, the implication and the belief out on the street is you guys will spend more. They need to turn that messaging around or they're never getting elected.
Well, I'm just calling this the pot meat kettle budget, right? Because of the deficit. Let me just say that. But I think all this is because, you know, he was going on and on the Ford government about Kathleen Wynne government and deficits. So here we go. It's all about, you know, upfront, just transparency always, right? So it's how you wrap this budget up. So yes, nothing much new in this in terms of the money being allocated. There's disappointment with healthcare. I don't care what anybody says. It just isn't there. And this, when we're talking about family doctors, this is a huge problem. And the spending for healthcare, you know, it was up marginally, nowhere near the rate of inflation, nothing happening to help us all have a family doctor in Ontario. So I just think that this is something that obviously is going to be picked apart. It's all politics, as Mark was saying. You know, nobody's ever going to stand up in the opposition. Well, Mart anyway, and say this is fantastic, right? But I think we just have to have a reality check here of what is and isn't happening. The spending's got to happen. Did they know the economy was going to be bad? Of course they did. You know, we all saw it coming with the interest rates. So I don't understand all the defensiveness from Mr. Bethlenfalvy about, oh, we didn't know. I don't buy it. But the bottom line is just be transparent. You're re-announcing things, and this is, you know, not great in areas that are really critical right now, like healthcare spending and like affordable housing.
Brad, you know your housing file. The mayor, we're bringing her up a lot this morning, tweeted out, pleased to see the provincial government making housing and infrastructure a priority in their budget. But many don't think that's the case. And we're still on the hunt for all this affordable housing that is coming to Toronto. Is there anything in the housing file that is worrying? There's obviously criticism there that the builds aren't moving fast enough because you can't hire crews at the inflation rate. They don't find it affordable to get building and put shovels in the ground.
And that's what's such a complicated factor in the housing mess is there are so many different elements. It ties back to immigration. It ties back to the types of folks who are coming into the country, what sort of skilled trades that they have available to them. The pressure on the supply chain just from immigration and refugees and that going upwards. The announcement of the budget yesterday, there was not any big shiny piece for housing. But I would say, in the defense of the provincial government here, they've been doing a lot of work on that. And I don't know if we want them to just wait until budget day to make these announcements. Let's remember they rolled up to City Hall with a big novelty check for, I think, $117 million just a few weeks ago. You look back to the fall and the historic upload of, 400 series highways,
DVP. And the gardener, right.
Like big capital investment. That was just a few months ago. And there is money in there for additional supportive housing over a number of years. We've built one of those in my community. It was tremendously successful. And I think the big thing is that $1.8 billion fund for what I call housing enabling infrastructure. That's where the province needs to be and the feds, frankly, build the infrastructure that helps unlock the density in the housing in our municipalities. We can't do it without that type of capital investment. They got $1.8 billion teed up for that. So it's helpful. It's not all one big thing. Oh, we're going to build this project, but it's laying the groundwork and the pieces over the past 12 months so that when the economic environment improves, when the trades come online, we're in a position where we can actually hit go.
And I think when Doug Ford made his fourplex comment last week, I'm like, that was kind of sudden, but there's no ban on municipalities building them. Many mayors are saying we're going to go ahead with the idea of 8 units in a building, 12 units in a building, because we should. You've advocated for this for a long time.
I moved a motion as part of the Housing Accelerator Fund with Minister Fraser just to do just that, and the staff will be coming back this quarter two on that. I mean, the other thing I want to highlight here is the province's call for municipalities to reduce property taxes on rental. Yeah. They've stepped up with the HST, the province and the feds. Municipalities are in a position where we could do more to ease that burden. And, in Toronto, we increased taxes 9.5% on rental constructed after 1998. So we should do more, and the mayor should reverse that decision.
Last thing I got, and we'll all listen to Mark Saunders on this one. Mark, 4 helicopters for Ontario Provincial Police. I got 2 questions for you. What's the best usage of these helicopters? Is it for street racers to catch auto theft? And the more important question, how much of a fight is there going to be among police officers to ride in the helicopter? Everybody's going to want to be the helicopter cop from now on. They're going to want it on because they want to be there. There's going to be wrestling matches to get into these helicopters, don't you think?
The best answer was that those helicopters got moved to Toronto. But you know what? Ontario is a big province, and you know what? To get from point to point and to do some of the stuff that they do, you're right. It will involve some of the things like street racing and things along those lines. But I couldn't fully explain everything that the helicopters are used for, but I do know that there was a point in time a few years ago where they were talking about this, and so they finally got it. It's going to be up to the commissioner to justify, where the bang for the dollar is.
Can we get you out of retirement to go up in one?
I'm okay, thanks.
Yeah, I know. I don't know about that, but it'd be fun. We need a TV show. That's got to get added to the Law and Order file for season 2. Steph, Mark, Brad, thanks so much for the time this morning.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.